Vekatra podcast conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vekatra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're diving deep into a truly foundational text. It's Thucydides' The History of the Peloponnesian War. Might be ancient history written, 2,400 years ago?
That's right. But the insights into human nature, politics, why nations fight, honestly, it feels like it could have been written yesterday.
It really does. It's the go-to account of that huge, devastating 27-year conflict between Athens and Sparta.
Exactly. Athens, the rising democratic sea power, and Sparta, the established oligarchic land power. But like you said, it's more than just a chronicle of battles. It's almost a blueprint for understanding political realism, leadership pitfalls, why great powers end up in conflict.
So our goal today is to unpack the core analysis of this clash, looking at how this vibrant democracy, Athens, ultimately failed against the more stoic oligarchy of Sparta.
And why understanding that dynamic is still so vital, whether you're looking at global politics or even, you know, power dynamics within large organizations today.
Absolutely. So let's start with the man himself, Thucydides. Who was he?
Well, to really get the book, you have to understand him. Thucydides lived around 460 to 400 BC. And importantly, he wasn't just some scholar sitting in a library. He was an Athenian aristocrat, wealthy, connected, and a general. A strategos, they called it.
So he was in the thick of it. He knew the players, the strategies, firsthand.
He absolutely did. But then came a crucial turning point, didn't it?
Yes. In 424 BC, he failed to prevent the Spartans from capturing a key city, Amphipolis. And for that failure, Athens exiled him.
Right. 20 long years in exile, which sounds like a disaster for him personally, but maybe it was a blessing for history.
Definitely history's game. That exile gave him something crucial. Perspective,
yeah.
And the freedom to actually travel and talk to people.
Exactly. He wasn't just stuck hearing the Athenian side. He spent those two decades interviewing eyewitnesses from Sparta, from their allies, the Peloponnesians, getting the whole picture. It allowed for, a much greater degree of objectivity.
And he took a completely different approach to history writing for his time. He tossed out the myths, the stories of gods interfering.
Yeah, he was really pioneering a kind of almost scientific method. Focusing purely on human actions, human motivations, fear, honor, self-interest, and trying to verify his sources. He wanted to know what happened and why people did what they did in secular terms.
So it's that combination, the insider experience as a general, plus the detached analytical approach from exile that makes him the father of what we now call political realism.
Precisely. And that realism leads us right to his core argument, his big thesis. Which today we often call the Thucydides trap.
Right. He argues the war wasn't really caused by the specific incidents or quarrels that sparked it. Those were just triggers.
The real cause, he says, was structural, deeper. It was about power shifts.
He puts it very bluntly, doesn't he? I think the quote is something like, "What made war inevitable was the growth of Athenian power and the fear which this caused in Sparta."
That's the one. It's stark. It's the essential dynamic. A rising power, Athens, causing fear in an established ruling power, Sparta. That fear, that shifting balance, creates an environment where war becomes, almost unavoidable.
Regardless of intentions, almost. It's the structure itself that pushes towards conflict.
Yes. And Thucydides wasn't just reporting news. He explicitly says he's writing this as a possession for all time, a tool for future generations, leaders, citizens, to understand these dynamics.
It's not just military history. It's political theory, sociology of war, psychology, all rolled into one.
And the story itself, the narrative arc, it's tragic. You see Athens at its height under the leadership of Pericles.
That brilliant statesman.
Then the devastating plague hits. Society starts to fray. You see the rise of these more brutal demagogues.
And it culminates in this massive strategic blunder, the Sicilian expedition, which is just catastrophic.
Let's dig into that arc a bit. Book one lays out that core cause we mentioned, Spartan fear of Athenian growth. And it introduces Pericles' initial strategy.
Right, the famous strategy. Pull everyone inside the long walls, connecting Athens to its port, rely completely on the navy, and basically concede the Attic countryside to Spartan raids.
A defensive patience strategy. He knew Athens couldn't beat Sparta on land, but believed their naval empire and finances could outlast them.
But then book two hits you with this incredible, almost cruel juxtaposition.
It's powerful. You get Pericles' funeral oration, this soaring speech, celebrating Athenian democracy, the citizens' dedication, their openness, their courage. It's the ideal of Athens.
One of the most famous speeches in history.
And then immediately after, Thucydides describes the plague of Athens.
Hmm.
Utter devastation.
He lived through it himself, didn't he?
He did, and he describes not just the physical suffering, but the social collapse. Lawlessness, despair, religious rites abandoned. If death was random and inescapable, why follow any rules? It killed Pericles himself and maybe a third of the population.
That breakdown really sets the stage for what follows. The moral compass starts to spin.
Definitely. And as the war grinds on, you see this hardening, this brutalization. Book 3 gives us the Mytilenean debate. Mytilene revolted. Athens crushed the revolt and the assembly, fired up by the demagogue Cleon.
Cleon, yeah.
Known for his harsh rhetoric.
He pushes them to vote to execute all the adult men of Mytilene and enslave the women and children as punishment and deterrent.
Just brutal.
They actually vote for it. But then the next day, there's another debate. Diades argues against it, not really on moral grounds, but on pragmatic ones, that such brutality is counterproductive to Athenian interests.
And they narrowly reverse the decision.
They do. They send a second ship racing to stop the first one. It's a moment where expediency just barely wins over vengeful fury, but it shows how far things had slipped.
And Thucydides also talks about the civil war in Corcyra around this time.
Ah, the stasis in Corcyra. That section is chilling. He describes how civil war utterly destroyed norms. Words themselves lost their meaning.
He says things like, reckless audacity came to be considered the courage of a loyal ally, while prudent hesitation was seen as specious cowardice. Fanatical extremism was praised. Moderation was suspect. Language itself became a weapon.
You can see echoes of that in polarized political discourse today, can't you? What? Where labels replace argument.
Absolutely. It's a timeless warning. And this erosion of morality, this focus on pure power, reaches its absolute undeniable peak in Book 5 with the Melian Dialogue.
Okay, set the scene for the Melian Dialogue. It's famous or maybe infamous.
It's stark. Athenian warships show up at Melos, a small neutral island. The Athenian envoys basically say, join our empire and pay tribute or be destroyed.
And the Melians, they try to argue.
They appeal to justice, to fairness, to their neutrality, even to the gods. They hope the Spartans might help them. They argue it's in Athens' own interest not to destroy the principle of neutrality.
And the Athenian response is just cold.
Ice cold. They essentially say, look, concepts like justice only matter between equals. Mm. Between the strong and the weak, the reality is different. And then comes that brutal line. The strong do what they can, and the weak suffer what they must.
No. No more appeals to democracy or ideals, just pure power politics.
Exactly. They explicitly state that the only relevant factors are power and self-interest. Honor, justice, irrelevant when you hold the power. Melos refuses to submit.
And the consequences.
Athens besieges the island, conquers it, kills all the men of military age, and sells the women and children into slavery. Just as they said they would. It's the end point of that moral decay that started with the plague and the war's pressures.
From the funeral oration to this, it's a terrifying transformation.
And that hubris, that belief in their unchecked power, leads directly into the next and perhaps final major disaster. The Sicilian Expedition, Books 6 and 7.
This huge gamble, right? Sailing a massive fleet all the way to Sicily to try and conquer Syracuse.
A massive gamble, driven largely by ambition and internal politics. The key figure pushing for it is Alcibiades.
Ugh, Alcibiades. Brilliant, charismatic, utterly untrustworthy.
That sums him up pretty well. Incredibly talented general, magnetic personality, but driven by personal glory and maybe not the city's best interests. He gets the expedition approved.
But then things go wrong for him personally.
Yes. Shortly after they sail, he's recalled to Athens to face charges of impiety. Rather than face trial, what does he do? He defects to Sparta.
No way. He tells the Spartans everything.
Pretty much. Advises them how to counter the expedition he himself launched. Meanwhile, command in Sicily falls primarily to Nicias.
Nicias, who was actually against the expedition in the first place, wasn't
he? He was. He was cautious, pious, respected, but also indecisive. Thucydides shows him making critical errors, delaying attacks or retreats because of bad omens like an eclipse, superstition playing a role in military disaster.
And the result in Sicily?
Total annihilation. The entire Athenian army and navy trapped and destroyed. Tens of thousands killed or captured and left to die in quarries. Thucydides calls it the greatest disaster of the war, maybe in all Greek history. And importantly, he shows it stemmed from Athenian overreach, internal divisions, and flawed leadership.
Athens essentially crippled itself. Book 8 then covers the fallout.
Right, the aftermath. Allies start revolting. There's an oligarchic coup in Athens itself, the Revolution of the 400 briefly overthrowing the democracy, and crucially, Persia starts funding the Spartan fleet. The end is near for Athens.
So, stepping back from the narrative, what are the big themes, the enduring lessons Thucydides leaves us with?
Well, first and foremost, I think, is the idea of the constancy of human nature.
That people don't really change?
Fundamentally, no. Thucydides believed the same passions, fear, ambition, greed, honor, self-interest, that drove the Greeks in his time would drive people always. That's why he thought his history would be useful forever.
And you certainly see those same motivations playing out today, everywhere from politics to business.
Absolutely. The second big theme is a warning about the limits of democracy.
How so? It starts with celebrating democracy in the funeral oration.
It does. And Thucydides shows democracy can be incredibly powerful and resilient, especially under wise, rational leadership like Pericles. But it's also vulnerable.
Vulnerable too.
To emotional appeals, to short-sighted decisions driven by anger or hope, and especially vulnerable to charismatic but self-serving demagogues like Cleon, or even Alcibiades in a way. They can sway the crowd towards disastrous policies, like the Sicilian expedition.
So wise leadership is critical, but easily lost, and then the system can eat itself.
That's a good way to put it. Which connects to the third theme, the corrupting logic of empire.
We saw that with Athens' journey from the funeral oration to the Melian dialogue.
Exactly. The very act of gaining and maintaining an empire, the necessities of power, seemed to slowly erode the moral foundations of the state. What starts as a defensive league, or even a noble project, can become ruthless and tyrannical simply to hold on to what it has.
It makes you think about any powerful institution, doesn't it? How does it hold on to its original values when faced with the pressures of maintaining its position?
It's a constant struggle. Thucydides suggests that power itself forces choices that compromise those values. It's a sobering thought.
And throughout this analysis, he drops these lines that just stick with you. They're incredibly quotable.
Oh, definitely. Timeless insights condensed into memorable phrases. We've already mentioned a few key ones.
Like the core cause of the war, the growth of the power of Athens made war inevitable, the structural argument.
Right. And that chilling line from the Melian dialogue, the strong do what they can and the weak suffer what they must, the bare-knuckle reality of power imbalance.
It's brutal honesty.
Then there's his reflection on the impact of conflict itself. War is a violent teacher, meaning it strips away illusions and reveals the harsh realities of human nature and necessity.
And maybe his overarching point about why his work endures, human nature being what it is, such things will happen again. The cyclical view of history, driven by unchanging human traits.
These aren't just historical observations. They feel like operating principles for the world.
So, how can someone listening apply these ideas today? What are the real-life applications?
Well, the most obvious one is in geopolitics. That concept of the Thucydides trap. The danger when a rising power challenges an established one, it's constantly invoked when discussing the U.S.-China relationship.
It's the dominant framework, really.
It is. Thucydides gives you the historical precedent, the analytical tools to think about the pressures and risks inherent in that kind of power transition.
And what about on a more maybe personal or societal level?
Think about his analysis of language in the Corcyran Civil War, how words got twisted, how rational debate collapsed into emotional labeling and extremism. That's incredibly relevant for media literacy today.
How so?
It trains you to be critical of political rhetoric, to notice when language is being used to inflame rather than explain, when labels are substituted for arguments, to resist, you know, manipulation by populist appeals that echo what Thucydides described.
Be aware of how words are being weaponized.
Exactly. And then there's leadership. The contrast between Pericles' rational, strategic, long-term thinking and Nicias' pious but indecisive, swayed by superstition, leading to catastrophe, it's almost a case study.
A warning about hubris and miscalculation.
Absolutely. It shows the immense cost of flawed leadership, especially in a crisis.
Yes.
Hubris, indecision, infighting. Thucydides shows they lead directly to disaster.
When you revisited this text, what stood out to you the most? Anything surprising?
You know, for me, it's always the complexity of Alcibiades. He's not just a villain. He's brilliant, incredibly capable, but his flaws, his ambition, his self-centeredness are just as large as his talents. He embodies this idea of genius intertwined with fatal self-destructive tendencies and how that can bring down not just an individual, but an entire state. It's fascinating and tragic.
Yeah, he's a Rorschach test almost. What about the ultimate takeaway for you? What's the core insight Thucydides forces us to confront?
I think it's the profound responsibility he places squarely on human shoulders. By rejecting divine intervention, by focusing on human motives and choices, he forces us to accept that we create the world we live in, including its conflicts. Our nature, our fear, our pride, our interest drives history.
So no excuses, basically.
So no excuses. His work is this clear-eyed, sometimes brutal, but absolutely essential analysis of why conflict happens and how power works. It's sobering, maybe even a little pessimistic about human nature, but vital for understanding the world.
A truly timeless, challenging, and indispensable piece of analysis.
Couldn't agree more.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.